And it's Toby Crystal time again. It's that time of the week. You're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Crystal and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Toby Crystal, Australian music journalist, right? You know that one. Toby Crystal wrote this book to give an idea of the most influential songs over the past 100 years. Not so much the greatest songs of all time, as he says in his foreword, when I find the page, these are 1001 songs that will enrich your life and broaden your palate. Some of these songs are terrible. John Lennon's Imagine is, in my opinion, pretentious and insincere, but I know I'm in the minority there. He hasn't got that particular song for us this week, though. He has, however, got The Beach Boys and God Only Knows from 1966. There's something about the simplicity that the people respond to, said lyricist Tony Escher, and it's such a compelling thing to say to someone, a phrase that implies, I am who I am because of you. Escher was a jingle writer and advertising copywriter when he was introduced to Beach Boy Brian Wilson. Asher's job was to provide lyrics to Pet Sounds, an intensely personal piece of work by a man who he barely knew. Surprisingly, the partnership proved perfect. There is an honesty to the album that is sometimes almost too candid. Brian Wilson was a troubled man. The demons of his life have been documented to death elsewhere. Suffice to say that at the time of making Pet Sounds, Wilson was feeling conflicted about his role within the Beach Boys and as an artist. He was also feeling conflicted about his relationships with his family, and especially with his wife Marilyn. God Only Knows is a song of complete devotion to Marilyn, and also suggests Wilson's apparent helplessness in dealing with the other forces in his life. It is the song of a man barely hanging on. In a few years he would be over the edge. Carl Wilson takes the lead vocal, covered in heavenly sounds from sleigh bells, harp, violins, cellos, flutes, and French horns. The melody appears to drift off into ether-like thing ceiling. Must look that up. A thing of high, proud, and delicate beauty. On hearing the song, Paul McCartney instantly felt competitive and rushed off and wrote Here, There, and Everywhere, but for once he failed to match Wilson's stunning achievement. The Beach Boys and God Only Knows here on Waiheke Radio.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me, so what good would I'd be without you.
God only knows what I'd be without.
The Beach Boys with God Only Knows from 1966. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the Great Songs of All Time, or to use the more tepid and tentative title, the most influential songs, more or less, maybe, possibly, if, according to some Australian music journalist who is he anyway? His name is Toby Cresswell, ladies and gentlemen. He was the editor of the Rolling Stone from 1987 till 1992. So, yes, he might be somewhat of an authority there. Anyway, this is 1001 Songs, the Great Songs of All Time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by Seth J. Tetley-Jones. Don't usually throw the J in there, do I? Stands for Joseph, by the way, if you're wondering, but no, I don't usually throw the J in there. Thought it, you know, actually, it'd be a touch of Americanism, I think. Or maybe not. Anyway, the next track we've got here is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and The Mercy Seat from 1988 appears on the album Tender Prey. My death has almost bored me, it's told, so often was it told, sang Nick Cave in Tender Prey. He only had himself to blame. His heroin habit was world famous. The 6 months it took to record the album was interrupted by Cave dealing with his addiction. As usual, most of his songs had a morbid cast, but if it wasn't his death he was writing about, then it was somebody else's damnation. It had been 10 years before the mic when Cave began this album. He had come a long way from bands The Boys Next Door and The Birthday Party. Nick Cave had recently completed his novel And the Ass Saw the Angel, his first serious prose, and it was finally getting close to mature voice. The Southern Gothic Flannery O'Connor meets Johnny Cash. It was a beginning, more than fevered opiate dreams. The Bad Seeds, too, found their voice on Tender Prey. This was the first record where they sounded like a rock band and not an anti-rock band. The Mercy Seat, Cave's ode to the electric chair, had all the grandeur that the musical director Mick Carvey was capable of. It had cinematic quality, a dark, noirish movie cinema, one thinks of Shock Corridor. Never heard of that film myself, but obviously Mr. Cresswell has, and if you have as well, good on you. The galloping rhythms of the Bad Seeds here matched the waves of fear that came with the execution. Cave sings without irony in the bravado of somebody who has faced death. As to Cave's summation with Tender Prey, it's patchy, he said. The Mercy Seat by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
They came and took me from a good dead road, of which I am nearly a only a fellow. I say again, I am not afraid to die.
Bye.
Cave and the Bad Seeds there with the Mercy Seat, an ode to the electric kit chair here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And don't forget, if you can't get that where you are, we are also live streaming on www.waihikiradio.org.nz. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. And I am Seth Tetley-Jones. Next up, the Jimi Hendrix Experience and Crosstown Traffic from 1968. Jimi Hendrix's third studio album began regularly enough on the 20th of October, 1967. Crosstown Traffic was in the first bunch of songs for this album, recorded at Olympic in London. The experience was pinned from 2 years of solid playing on stage and occasionally in the studio. Crosstown Traffic is a straightforward blues given a very tough twist by Hendrix. The speed of the song as it rips through riffs and shows not only Hendrix's confidence, but also the way his life was getting wilder and wilder. Crosstown Traffic is jagged and speedy and a little crazy, like trying to juggle priorities and keep everything moving. People who can't put down performance, people who can use their eyes and their ears at the same time. Hendrix said they've got a button on their shoulder blades that keeps only one working at one time. Look, man, we might play sometimes, and sometimes we just stand in there, and sometimes we do the whole diabolical bit when we're in the studio and there's nobody to watch. And it's how we feel. How we feel? Well, we're getting the music out, that's all. And as soon as people understand that, the better. Electric Ladyland would take another year to finish, and on the way, Hendrix would go on one of his most incredible journeys in music, the Jimi Hendrix Experience and Crosstown Traffic. We'll be right back.
Accused of hit and run, tire tracks all across your back. I can see you had your fun, but darling, can't you see my signals turn from green to red? And with you, I can see a traffic jam straight up ahead. You're just like so hard to get through to you.
The Jimi Hendrix Experience and Crosstown Traffic from 1968. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Australian music journalist Toby Cresswell and presented by Seth Tetley-Jones. The next of 1001 songs is Townes Van Sant and Tecumseh Valley from 1969. I think Townes is one of the greatest folk songwriters that my native Texas ever gave birth to, said Nancy Griffith. Some of us songwriters are just lyricists, but he was definitely a poet. In the mid-1960s, Van Sant, born into a wealthy Texas oil family, forsook the family business to become a singer and a songwriter. His was the world of the road and the American archetypes to be found there. He transformed these stories with an eye for detail and a poetic sense that owed a debt to both Bob Dylan and Elvis Presley. Johnny Cash is producer Jack Clement, my slip of the tongue there, Dick Clement, for your information, was one of the writers of the British television series of the 1970s, Porridge. Just a bit of useless information for you there. But this isn't Dick Clement, this is Jack Clement, who was produced some of Johnny Cash's records. And the thing about Jack Clement is that he recorded... He recorded Townes Van Sant's first album for the sake of the song from which Tecumseh Valley features. Van Sant's influence was to transform Texas songwriting from Guy Clark, Lyle Lovett, Steve Earle, Joe Eli, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and others. His influence can also be heard in Roseanne Cash, Paul Kelly, Emily Lou Harris, and countless more who are better known than Townes will ever be. Tecumseh, on his first album, is a perfect example of Townes' full song, full of tragedy and pain, a kind of willfulness to live, and a storyline that's saved from cliché by the rhythm of its telling. Townes Van Sant and Tecumseh Valley.
Where the name she gave was Caroline, the daughter of a miner, and her ways were free, and it seemed to me the sunshine walked beside her. Her where she come from, Spencer, across the hill. She said her pa had sent her, 'cause the coal was low and soon the snow would turn the skies to winter. Well, she said she'd come to look for work. She was not seeking favors for a dime a day and a place to stay. She turned those hands to labor. But the times were hard, Lord, and the jobs were few. All through Tecumseh Valley, but she asked around, and a job she found, tending bar for Gypsy Sally. Well, she saved enough to get back home when spring replaced the winter. But her dreams were denied, her pa had died. All the word come down from Spencer. Where she turned to whoring out on the streets with all the lust inside her. It was many a man returned again to lay himself beside her. Well, they found her down beneath the stairs that led to Gypsy Sally. In her hand when she died was a note to cry. Fare thee well, Tecumseh Valley. Where the name she gave was Caroline, the daughter of a miner. And her ways were free, and it seemed to me the sunshine walked beside her.
Towns Van Sant and Tecumseh Valley here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as presented by Toby Creswell and selected by Seth Tetley-Jones. It could have been a brilliant career by Belle and Sebastian. Belle and Sebastian was the band that Britain had to have, the Scottish combo, which took its name from a kids' TV show, started with just two, Stuart Murdoch and Stuart David. They put themselves in that English tradition, going back to Nick Drake and Ray Davies and Morrissey, all the bitsits and wet weekends and wheat tea leavened with sarcasm and irony. Belle and Sebastian weren't afraid to build delicate melodic arrangements, but they also weren't afraid to be playful with them either. While there is a sense of melancholy through their work, there's little of Nick Drake's self-pity. Belle and Sebastian's version of kitchen sink folk rock arrived just as Britpop priapism had reached its peak. Their first LP was a critical triumph, though most of the public never heard it. Her second LP was better realised. By its third album, Belle and Sebastian were finding their feet. It Could Have Been a Brilliant Career opens The Boy with the Arab Strap, with Belle and Sebastian's beautiful sense of melody and Murdoch's wry take on the possibilities of youth. What really excites me in bands that prepare to borrow from absolutely everything but come up with something on their own, said bass player Stuart David, and we're becoming a wee bit more willing to do that. Bell and Sebastian, it could have been a brilliant career.
He had a stroke at the age of 24. It could have been a brilliant career. 18 lines in a school that was too well known. 18 lines with a friend who had gone before. She challenged everyone to a fight, but the people all backed down, and they ran her out of town. Cause she drank and swore and spoke, out of turn she was the village joke. She had a stroke at the age of 24. It could have been a brilliant career. Getting clients to finance her strategy. She's filling time in the Safeway on Saturdays. She wears the clothes of an emperor, but her paintings are a sham. And they're going for a grand. When the dealers come to view, will they ever see the real? It could have been a brilliant career, selling lies to the boys with the old dancers, pulling the wool, playing the fool. It's no wonder that he is dribbling and spit tonight. And the one he sent away was the only one who stayed. With a spoon and a decent book, you can tell by the way she looks. She is sorry and resigned as he wets himself for the first time.
Bell and Sebastian, it could have been a brilliant career, from 1998. This is Waiheke Radio. 88.3 and 107.4, and this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. Aerosmith and Janie's Got a Gun. Aerosmith tagged one of the greatest comebacks in rock and roll. Crucial Business, not known for giving second chances. They were superstars of the 70s, with record-breaking drug habits by the early 80s. They were broke and unemployable. Then, with the help of manager Lou Cox and Narcotics Anonymous, they joined the Recovery Nation and reformed and went on the road, accompanied by their own drug police. The surprise to everyone, however, was that they resumed recording and writing at least as well as when they had fallen apart a decade previously. Aerosmith 1 had been sleazy rock and roll, Aerosmith 2 was 80s stadium rock. What scared the shit out of us was that although we had a band back together, we weren't able to write a song to save our lives, so we were already primed for change, said singer Steven Tyler. It was just such a simple idea, but it wasn't within our grasp to think of it like that, because we were always such a party band with a tear-down-the-walls attitude. So for us all to do at once, I don't know if it could have happened. Janie's Got a Gun, on their second sober album, Pump, was one of their best reformed singles. No longer the sloppy junkies, everything on this track is tight and beautifully balanced. The orchestration and arrangement is steady, the use of oriental flavours, and the intro adds some mystery and drama. There is a clean-cut rock. What gives the song an edge is the stark tale of child abuse, incest, and murder. Tyler delivers the song without resorting to metal melodrama and makes the tale much more real. Aerosmith and Janie's Got a Gun.
It's the sound of my gun.
Aerosmith, Janie's Got a Gun from 1989. Aerosmith staged one of the great comebacks in rock and roll, A Cruel Business, Not... Oh, no, I've already read that one. Now, we have come to our 100th song here at 1001 Songs on Waiheke Radio, which is Fiona Apple and Sleep to Dream. Fiona Apple was a star at 19. Her debut album title, featuring Criminal and Sleep to Dream, was a major hit, even though her singer-songwriter style, she jokingly referred to her image as a tragic waif ethereal victim, became a jazzy piano colouring and confronting lyrics. But then, Apple had much to get off her chest. Not least of her issues was the anger that followed being raped at 12 years old. "I have problems," she said, "but not everybody's got problems, and I sometimes honestly have felt in my life that people have used me as a way to make themselves feel better, and I'm a very good subject to save, and sometimes I think I'm not that bad off, unless it's really you that's making me feel shit." Apple certainly fitted into the category of Alanis Morissette with... created with Ironic in 1995, but Apple is more complex than just pop psychiatry. Her influences are rich, and her style is idiosyncratic. Producer Andy Slater encouraged a young woman with a piano, as he encouraged her to draw on all her influence rather than just fit her singer-songwriter box. There were record shopping she stocked up on The Roots, Pharoahside, Miles Davis, Ella Fitzgerald and Marvin Gaye. Sleep to Dream is a defiant breakup song written for her ex-boyfriend Tyson. Fiona Apple and Sleep to Dream.
I tell you how I feel, but you don't care. I say tell me the truth, but you don't dare. You say love is a hell you cannot bear. And I say give me mine back and then go there for all I care. I got my feet on the ground and I don't go to sleep to dream. You got your head. I have never been so insulted in all my life. I could swallow the sea twice down all this pride. First you run like a fool just to be at my side. And now you run like a fool but you just run to hide. And I can't abide. I got my feet on the ground and I don't go to sleep to dream. You got your head in the clouds and not at all what you seem. This mindless body and this voice cannot be stopped. Don't you plead me your case, don't bother to explain. Don't even show me your face, cause it's a crying shame. Just go back to the rock from under which you came. Take the sorrow you gave and all the stakes you claim. And don't forget the blame. I got my feet on the ground and I don't go to sleep to dream. You got your head in my clouds. I got my feet on.
Fiona Apple and Sleep to Dream on YQ Radio 88.3 and 107.4. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Australian music journalist Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Björk and It's Oh So Quiet, Blow a Fuse. In a career full of surprises, Björk's oddball version of big band jazz with this cover of Betty Hutton's 1948 hit Blow a Fuse ranks near the top. It was a song she learnt on the tour bus and became her biggest hit. Isn't that the best song that you've heard for 5 years? Asked Björk rhetorically, in a way that it is against all my principles to do an old cover version because I'm so anti-retro. Because it has the story, the narrative, and there is a beginning, and sometimes something happens in the middle, and the ending is different. So many songs, especially with English lyrics, are just 900 ways of saying she left me, which I actually love because it's pop and one idea, very simple, doesn't mean it's cheap. I can relate to it, but I belong to the storytelling group. The song has bipolar arrangement that Björk amplifies with her dramatic vocal and her propensity to cause trouble.
It's oh so quiet. Shh, shh. It's oh so still. Shh, shh. You're all alone. Shh, shh. And so peaceful until. About a guy you wanna love, you wanna cry, you cross your heart and hope to die till it's over, and then shh, shh, it's nice and quiet, shh, shh, but soon again, shh, shh, start another. The big riot. You blow a fuse, simple. The Democrats lose, simple. So what's the use? Wow! Of falling in love. It's a fit. This guy's coaching, I got hit. This no mistake. This is it! Till it's over, and then it's nice and quiet. But soon again, starts another big riot.
Björk. Oh. I said Björk and she told me to shut up. That's wonderful. Anyway, Björk. Björk and It's Oh So Quiet, Blow a Fuse. You're listening to YHQ Radio 88.3 and 107.4. This is 1001 Songs, 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Australian music journalist Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. Next up, we have The Specials and Ghost Town. Having started a ska revival, The Specials keyboardist Jerry Dammers pushed the genre into a new shape. Using the bouncing, slightly spastic ska rhythm and drenching it with lashings of dub echo, Dammers made a requiem what was essentially party music. Ghost Town was written in the wake of massive riots in the Jamaican ghetto of Brixton, and in the context of a rampantly conservative Thatcher government, the rising unemployment and the climate of racism that engulfed Britain at the time, The Specials gigs had been targeted as recruiting sites for right-wing groups such as the National Front, which led to confrontations between mods and skinheads. Their shows were regularly stopped because of violence on the dance floor. Ghost Town became an urban anthem in Britain in the summer of 1981. The paranoia was positively seeps out of Ghost Town, with the consequence of deteriorating relationships in the band. Shortly after the song's release, singer Terry Hall, Neville Staple and Lynn Val Golding jumped the ship for less dictatorial collective Funboy 3. Ghost Town sounds like its name. It's spare and haunted and frightening. The Specials and Ghost Town. The Specials and Ghost Town from 1981. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM, going back 10 years from 1981. 1971, Midnight Mile, The Rolling Stones. Drugs began to take over Keith Richards' life in 1970, to the point where he has started missing sessions or was too stoned to play. Moonlight Mile, the final track on Sticky Fingers, sounded like the closing song for an era, the culmination of the Rolling Stones' life from an arty blues band in London through the chaos of their early stardom, then their early status as the coolest group of the era. In a sense, Moonlight Mile is an answer to Satisfaction, which came only 5 years earlier. The song captures the atmosphere of the dawn breaking on the third day without sleep. The gentle acoustic guitar of its lilting melody introduces the mood, and then Charlie Watts' cymbals and little pricks of sharp notes add to the cocaine references. Jagger sings the song as though he is stuck on the road and has no expectation of ever getting off. Paul Buckmaster's elegant string arrangement is strung on nervous tension. Mostly, though, it's Mick Taylor's guitar that makes this song work. He has a fluid, eloquent style that expands the melodic possibilities in the Rolling Stones more than any other player ever has. With Richards missing in the action, the stage was all his. This was, in fact, the end of an era. With Sticky Fingers, the Rolling Stones started to drift apart and the drugs began to take over. The Rolling Stones and Moonlight Mile.
No, we are.
Rolling Stones and Moonlight Mile. This has been 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by me, Seth, who will be back next week from 8 till 9 here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4, and of course on Saturday afternoons there is a repeat of this week's show at 2 p.m.